What I'm going to talk about is not about dairy manure, and what we've been working on is looking at biochar effects a little bit on nitrogen fertilizer in our sandy soils in the southeastern part of the United States in Georgia and South Carolina. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors and Dr. Harry Schomburg from ARS at Watkinsville and Keith Harris at University of Georgia. We used biochars produced both at the University of Georgia by Casey Doss and Isabel Lima down at ARS in Louisiana, and Dr. Amedna at North Carolina A&T. And this is a piece of a incubation study that's being led by Jeff Novak at Florence. Okay. So basically, you know, we've gotten past the stage where we think biochar is this monolithic entity that sometimes it's portrayed as on the web, and we know that the feedstock and pyrolysis conditions do have great effects on the characteristics of biochar that will be important for agricultural use. And I wish that you all had been here this morning for Johannes Lehmann's talk about proximate analysis, because he gave a great introduction to this. We've used this method, which is an engineering method, to look at ranking coals, and it looks at fixed carbon, it looks at the amount of volatile matter and ash, and it's it is a rather crude method, but it is relatively straightforward and relatively cheap to run. So it has great potential to help us classify these biochars for agronomic use. So that's one thing that we've looked at. We know that pyrolysis and feedstock also can affect sorption properties of the biochar, the pH, and surface area and porosity. And we know all of these things can affect how nitrogen might be utilized and transformed in the soils. So just to illustrate this, these are the eight different biochars that we used in our study, and you can see we have a pretty good range. We had three feedstocks that are, you know, vegetative materials. These are all things that are relatively available in the southeast U.S. And then we had the poultry litter down here at the bottom, which is a mixture of poultry manure and pine shavings. And as we had biochars produced at a range of temperatures, these ones in green we're calling low temperature biochars. This is slow pyrolysis. And our switchgrass was actually really a torrefied material. It's not really a biochar. At this 250 degrees C, we're really not seeing a lot of changes in composition of this material. And our low temperatures ran from 250 to 400 with our peanut hull. Our high temperature biochars ran from 500 up to 700. And you can see that as we increase temperature, we increase the amount of fixed carbon, we decrease volatile matter, and we tend to increase ash, we increase the pH, and we decrease the negative surface charge. Okay, so that just gives a little background for the types of chars we were working with, and a lot of this and more characterization of these chars is available in Dr. Novak's paper in 2009. So one of the things several things we wanted to look at, we thought that we might see with the low temperature biochars that would have a higher negative surface charge that they would have a greater capacity to hold on to particularly ammonium nitrate. And we thought obviously that the biochar pH would affect soil pH, and we could see ammonium loss, or we might see other things going on there. We thought we might see with a higher volatile matter charge that be available as a carbon source for the microbes. We might see an increase in microbial biomass and see retention of nitrogen that way. That volatile matter content could be a source for the microbes. It also sometimes contains things like furans and other things that we don't normally think of as being very microbial beneficial. So it could also have a negative effect on them or no effect at all. We had an incubation experiment with those eight biochars that I showed you in a Norfolk loamy sand. This is a very low soil organic matter, about 0.5 percent carbon, low cation exchange capacity, low fertility soil. The biochar application was fairly high, about 2%. 44 megagrams per hectare. We had an unamended control, and we had treatments with and without ammonium nitrate, and it was applied at about 150 kilograms per hectare, which would be in the range of what our crops would receive in the area. This was incubated for 120 days and leached four times with DI water during the incubation. What our piece of the puzzle is looking at nitrogen fractions and how these might change between our initial treatments and at the end of the incubation. So what we did was look at inorganic nitrogen, which we obtained by doing a cold KCl extraction and measuring ammonium and nitrate. We looked at mineralizable N, which we did a hot KCl ammonium extraction, and that mineralizable N was calculated by subtracting out the cold KCl ammonium. We looked at what we are calling a resistant fraction, which was a sodium hydroxide digestion, and where we corrected for the ammonium that would have been accounted for in mineralizable N by subtracting out that hot KCl fraction, and then a fixed N fraction, which was a total N by combustion, where we subtracted out the sodium hydroxide digested nitrogen and the coal nitrate. So I'm going to present this data on these nitrogen fractions. We first looked at whether or not we had a difference with fertilizer added, which let's hope we did, and we did. And then we looked at our fertilized treatments only. And what I'm presenting today is the final results from the end of the incubation minus what our initial results were. And we looked at the difference from the control with Dunnett's and then used Proc Mix to look at an ANOVA. So if we look at our initial treatments, I wanted to show you this data just to put some things into context. You know, we did see a significant difference when we added the nitrogen, which is good. And you can see that's the size of that pool, very much smaller mineralizable nitrogen pool, and there was a significant difference there, and not a difference in the resistant or the fixed fractions, which we would certainly expect from that initial thing. But I also want to point out here, as you would expect, that that fixed fraction is by far the greatest pool of nitrogen in these samples. And then that resistant fraction was about the same as what we saw in the inorganic fraction when we added the ammonium nitrate. So if we look at inorganic nitrogen, and let me get you oriented here. Remember, this is final minus initial. And if I can get, this is our control. Peanut hull at high temperature, peanut hull at low temperature, poultry litter high, poultry litter low, pecan shell high, pecan shell low, switchgrass high, and switchgrass low. And all the graphs will be in this sort of a format. So the first thing to notice is with that switchgrass low temperature, remember I mentioned at 250 degrees centigrade, it really was more of a torrefied material. We did not see any difference in its behavior with the control. Did see a difference from the other biochar amendments. And both temperature and biochar feedstock were significant. And you can see that we had the smallest difference with poultry litter biochars, followed by peanut hull, the pecan shells, and then the switchgrass. And initially, you might look at that and think that we're retaining some of that nitrogen. But actually, what we did see was a big pH effect. And what I've just added here is the pH of the biochar soil mixture. And what happened was that adding that poultry litter, particularly the high temperature poultry litter at that high rate, we ran that soil pH up very high and lost nearly all the added ammonium. So these differences that look, it is a smaller difference, but it's because they started out with a lower level of nitrogen. And you can see we have this group here where our pHs were near 7.5, where we did think we were seeing considerable volatilization, and then this other group here with a lower pH. So we went in and ran a second little incubation just to confirm that. It was a short-term incubation where we trapped the ammonium with hydrogen, with sulfuric acid. And indeed, that we were able to show that's what we were doing. Here's that high-temperature poultry litter again. pH ran up to 9.7, and we lost a huge amount of the nitrogen added. And where the pH is, this pattern pretty much follows the pH of the biochar soil mixture, which is not unexpected. So if we look at the biochar pH and the ammonium ammonia loss, we did see a good correlation there, but our better correlation is with this ash from the proximate analysis. And again, I mentioned to you that that might be a quick way for us to help evaluate some of these biochars, and that looks like a very good way to do that. If we look at mineralizable N, we did not see any difference between the control. We did see a trend with a higher mineralizable N and the higher temperature biochars, which I found surprising because I expected with lower volatile matter in there that we might see a higher thing there. But these are some volatile matter numbers here, and you can see that there is no pattern there. With the resistant N, we saw this same pattern here with the higher pH groups. We thought, again, some of that might be related to volatile matter content or this ratio between total and fixed carbon, but there's no pattern there. So that appears to be related to pH or ash content. Could be that those systems were nitrogen limited because they lost nitrogen in the beginning, or we might have some poisoning going on with the high ash content. With the fixed nitrogen, there was no difference between the controls or biochar treatments. So what we saw in this little incubation was that the greatest effect that biochar had on the fertilizer addition was in the inorganic and the resistant nitrogen fractions. We don't see any evidence that the low temperature biochars were retaining in. In these poorly buffered sandy soils, our biggest effect was a pH effect, and that was because we used such high rates. But those rates are being mentioned for carbon sequestration, so it's a red flag for us. And I do think that we can use this proximate analysis to give us ash that will help us evaluate how we can use these. So since Jim is standing up, I don't have any time to talk about poultry litter, and that's the end.